to come and read to us from Jonah.
The Lord spoke to Jonah, son of Amittai. Nineveh is a big city. I have heard about the many evil things the people are doing there. So go there and tell them to stop doing such evil things. But Jonah tried to run away from the Lord. He went to Joppa and found a boat that was going to the faraway city of Tarshish. Jonah paid money for the trip and went on the boat. He wanted to travel with the people on this boat to Tarshish and run away from the Lord. But the Lord brought a great storm on the sea. The wind made the sea very rough. The storm was very strong and the boat was ready to break apart. The men wanted to make the boat lighter to stop it from sinking, so they began throwing the cargo into the sea. The sailors were very afraid. Each man began praying to his God. Jonah had gone down into the boat to lie down, and he went to sleep. The captain of the boat saw Jonah and said, "Wake up! Why are you sleeping? Pray to your God. Maybe your God will hear your prayer and save us." Then the men said to each other, "We should throw lots to find out why this is happening to us." So the men threw lots. The lots showed that the troubles came to them because of Jonah. Then the men said to Jonah, "It is your fault that this terrible thing is happening to us. Tell us, what have you done? What is your job? Where do you come from? What is your country? Who are your people?" Jonah said to them, "I am a Hebrew. I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the land and the sea." Jonah told the men he was running away from the Lord. The men became very afraid when they learned this. They asked Jonah, "What terrible thing did you do against your God?" The wind and the waves of the sea were becoming stronger and stronger. So the men said to Jonah, "What should we do to save ourselves? What should we do to you to make the sea calm?" Jonah said to the men, "I know I did wrong, and that's why the storm came on the sea. So throw me into the sea and the sea will become calm." Instead, the men tried to row the ship back to the shore, but they couldn't do it. The wind and the waves of the sea were too strong, and they were becoming stronger and stronger. So the men cried to the Lord, "Lord, please don't say we are guilty of killing an innocent man. Please don't make us die for killing him. We know you are the Lord, and you will do whatever you want." So the men threw Jonah into the sea. The storm stopped and the sea became calm. When the men saw this, they began to fear and respect the Lord. They offered a sacrifice and made special promises to the Lord. When Jonah fell into the sea, the Lord chose a very big fish to swallow Jonah. He was in the stomach of the fish for 3 days and 3 nights.
Great book of Jonah. It is a fairly simple book. We follow the prophet from the beginning of the call to the end of the call. However, it is a book of opposites. All is not as it first appears. It is like looking in a mirror. Now, those of you who look into mirror regularly, who maybe do your makeup, or your hair, or maybe have to pluck a straight eyebrow or nose hair, it can be confusing about what side of your face you're trying to do. You can be in your nose, thinking you're doing your left nostril, thinking you're doing your right one, or you can be there with your hair straightener, not realising where your hair clippers are going. You've all lived that experience, haven't you? Yes. Or, and they say, when we walk down the street, if we were to see an exact clone of us, we wouldn't recognise ourselves because we're so used to seeing the mirror image. So I would like to keep that in our minds as we go through the book of Jonah. And here we are with Jonah, the great prophet, God's godly man. So here is our first question. What is a prophet? Yes, Jonathan. A messenger of God. Give that man a gold star. Whoop. Oh, the snacks are out. Everyone's woken up a little bit. And what is a characteristic of a prophet? What do we expect our prophets to be like, Evie? Faithful. Like that one. You can have a some holy. You can have it if you can remember what holy means. Yes. There you go. Adults, what do we want from our prophets, Pat? Listening closely to God. What do we want? Pardon? Bold, yes? Fearless. Any other ones from the adults, from the Brack Rose? Honest? Richard? Oh, faithful to God, yeah, I'll take that one. Knowledgeable, yes. Obedient. Yes, they're all good words. Ordinary. Hang on, we're obedient over there. Ordinary. Ooh, very good. What about joy? Peaceful, patient, kindness, generosity, self-control, faithfulness, gentle. All these good, holy words that we know of for our prophets. And yet, Jonah. I have a book about Jonah and it calls him the groaner. He's grumpy. He's miserable. He is a man who runs in the opposite direction. He will even plead for death before the end. This is not our great prophet that we aspire to be. We get told in verse 2, go to great Nineveh, go to the city of Nineveh and preach against it. And Jonah is not a fan. He gets on a boat, opposite direction, and does the number one avoidance tactic in my household, which is to take a nap. He is like, I so don't want to do this. I'm going to have a nap. But here is the second mirror image. We have our prophet who is not what we expect. Here is a bunch of sailors who are pagan. They do not worship the Hebrew God. It says when the storm came, they were prayed to their own gods. And of course, nothing happens. The storm keeps going. The wind gets worse. They become even more frightened. And they finally work out that it is Jonah who is the problem. So they decide to throw him over the side of the boat, which is a pretty drastic thing to do, but whatever. They've decided, you're going off the side of the boat and we're going to do something that is so different for us. We've tried our gods and they don't work. But your God, they see it. They see what God is and who God is. God, the creator of the universe, who controls the wind and waves, and they give their lives to God. They make sacrifices and they make promises completely to God. We have the anti-prophet who doesn't do what we expect, and we have the pagan sailors who give their lives to God. So now we are going to sing our song with actions. Now, if you are willing.
While Jonah was in the stomach of the fish, he prayed to the Lord his God. He said, I was in very bad trouble. I called to the Lord for help, and he answered me. I was deep in the grave. I cried to you, and you heard my voice. You threw me in the sea. Your powerful waves splashed over me. I went down, down into the deep sea. The water was all around me. Then I thought, now I must go where you cannot see me. But I continued looking to your holy temple for help. The seawater closed over me. The water covered my mouth, and I could not breathe. I went down, down into the deep sea, seaweed wrapped around my head. I was at the bottom of the sea, the place where the mountains begin. I thought I was locked in this prison forever. But the Lord my God took me out of my grave. God, you gave me life again. My soul gave up all hope, but then I remembered the Lord. I prayed to you, and you heard my prayers in your holy temple. Some people worship useless idols, but those statues never help them. I will give sacrifices to you, and I will praise and thank you. I will make special promises to you, and I will do what I promise. Salvation only comes from the Lord. Then the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out of its stomach onto the dry land.
You can think of a very tricky five-letter word. Can anyone think of any, Peter? A tricky five-letter word. Evie, can you think? Trick, T-R-I-C-K. Oh, yeah, that's a five-letter. What makes it tricky? Because it's a trick. Oh, all right. Water, why is water tricky? Because it's got an A, not an R in it. Okay, anyone else? Can anyone else think of any... Oh, Duncan, am I going to know what this word is? Oh, yeah, I wouldn't know how to spell that. Okay. I'd go with that one. That's a tricky word. Anyone else? In fact, I don't even know if it's got five letters. That's how much I don't know how to spell that word. John. Oh, very good. You'd get a gold star. I would not. Anyone else? Any other tricky? Yes. Chaos. Oh, what makes that word tricky? Because it's got a ch at the beginning, you're right, and it doesn't sound like that at all. How about, this is the word I find trickiest, it's five letters, the word sorry. Because it's easy to say, it's easy to spell. It's not a yacht word, it's not a chaos word. But it's really hard to say it and mean it, isn't it? It's really hard. And when we have to say it, it means that we're admitting that we've done something wrong. Whether it's that we've used hands that aren't gentle and kind, or whether we've double booked our diary and we have to let someone down. Oh yeah, you haven't ordered the shopping. Yeah, that's a, yeah. Someone would get into trouble in our house if that happened. Or maybe it's because you've arrived late for something. I feel like I say that one a lot when I arrive late. Or we've used our words to say unkind things. Either way, we have to admit that we've said something wrong. And whatever age we are, or whatever stage in life, that word can be quite hard to say. So now, we're with Jonah in the belly of a fish. A book that mirrors our lives in so many ways and challenges us. Jonah's run away from God. At this point, we don't quite know why, but he's decided, that's not for me, I'm heading that way and not that way. And he finds himself in a bit of a pickle with no way out. And it's from this place of despair that he decides to turn to God. And haven't we all been there? In fact, when I was writing this, I found this little story and I could identify with one of the characters. I wonder if you can work out which one. Three ministers were talking about prayer in general and the appropriate and effective positions of prayer. Above them, a telephone repairman was working on the lines, and one minister said that the key to effective prayer was in the hands pointing upwards. The second said, True prayer was from one's knees. The third suggested that the only truly effective prayer position was to lie face out on your front. Face out on your front. I mean flat out on your face. That one works better, doesn't it? The telephone repairman, however, was listening, and he interjected, "I found that the most powerful prayer I ever made was while I was dangling upside down by my heels from a pole suspended 40 feet above the ground." I think that's me. He had a point, doesn't he? I suspect that the most fervent and powerful prayer Jonah ever prayed was probably from the belly of a fish. And Jonah, at the end of himself, turns to God and goes through what has happened. In many ways, it's a bit like a psalm. There's lots of imagery, but also an awareness of what's going on. Verse 2, 4, and 7, for example, show some level of remorse. Verse 7 says, "When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you." It's like he has this moment of realization that God is the one who is ever present and ever faithful, and only God who can rescue him. And verse 9 then goes on to say, "But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you what I have vowed I will make good." But do we ever actually hear him use the word sorry? The word that's sometimes so difficult to say never actually comes out of his mouth. And in fact, before he says he will make good his vows, he also then talks about those clinging to worthless idols forfeits God's love for them. Has he really got it? Is it repentance or is it a bargaining chip? I don't know. Is he humble in repentance? Different people have different views, and you all have your own. But what we do know is that if the story of Jonah is like a mirror held up to our lives, we see a God who loves Jonah and loves the people of Nineveh in equal measure. A God who hears the cry of Jonah's heart. Our prayers are transparent to God. He knows our intentions. He knows our thoughts. And even when we can't quite articulate the word, whether that be sorry or something else, he knows what our heart says. He heard Jonah, and he got the whale to vomit him back up onto the shore. If I was to hold a mirror up to my life, I think I can be genuinely sorry, but at the same time, still not necessarily like those around me that have done me wrong, or I've judged for something, to be less worthy of something maybe. So what does it truly mean to say sorry with our heart and head? Maybe that's something that Jesus can teach us. So it's time for our prayers, and you'll notice that there are some fish on your chairs. If you don't have a fish on your chair, there are lots of spare chairs where there are fish. You'll just...
Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. "Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I gave you." Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now Nineveh was a very important city. A visit required 3 days. On the first day, Jonah started into the city. He proclaimed, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned." The Ninevites believed God. They declared a fast, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. When the news reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. Then he issued a proclamation in Nineveh. "By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let any man or beast, herd or flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish." When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he had compassion and did not bring upon them the destruction he had threatened.
Thank you. 40 more days and Nineveh will be overturned. An 8-word crystal clear sermon. 8 words. Can you imagine? We should let Tim know. 8 words is all it needs for sermons to be efficient and work. So what do we hear when we hear the word overturned? Destroyed. Any other things that we hear when we hear overturned? Evie? The other way around. The other way around, okay. Overturned, destroyed. Topsy-turvy. Is it a good word or a bad word? Bad. It's a bad word. Fire, destruction. The end of days has been proclaimed for Nineveh. But here we are in a book of opposites. Things not being quite as they seem. We expect that it's going to go awfully for the Ninevites. Yet, if you've ever made an upside down cake, when you overturn it, the most glorious pattern of pineapple comes out. If you overturn in bed, you have one of two options. You have a floor, or you have extra coziness. If you are a gardener, you overturn your topsoil for the new things to grow. And here we are in the evil place of Nineveh. And they heard the call. And even their king was overturned. He said sorry. They turned from evil to God. They were turned over to God. To be overturned isn't necessarily destruction. Good things come when we turn to God. So just like the Ninevites, maybe our hearts can be overturned to God.
Jonah was not happy that God saved the city. Jonah became angry. He complained to the Lord and said, "Lord, I knew this would happen. I was in my own country and you told me to come here. At that time, I knew that you would forgive the people of this evil city. So I decided to run away to Tarshish. I knew that you are a kind God. I knew that you show mercy and don't want to punish people. I knew that you are kind. And if these people stop sinning, you would change your plans to destroy them. So now, Lord, just kill me. It's better for me to die than to live." Then the Lord said, "Do you think it is right for you to be angry?" Jonah went out of the city to a place near the city on the east side. He made a shelter for himself and sat there in the shade, waiting to see what would happen to the city. The Lord made a gourd plant grow quickly over Jonah. This made a cool place for Jonah to sit and helped him to be more comfortable. He was very happy because of this plant. The next morning, God sent a worm to eat part of the plant. The worm began eating the plant, and the plant died. After the sun was high in the sky, God caused a hot east wind to blow. The sun became very hot on Jonah's head, and he became very weak. He asked God to let him die. He said, "It is better for me to die than to live." But God said to Jonah, "Do you think it is right for you to be angry just because this plant died?" Jonah answered, "Yes, it is right for me to be angry. I'm angry enough to die." And the Lord said, "You did nothing for that plant. You did not make it grow. It grew up in the night and the next day it died. And now you're sad about it. If you can get upset over a plant, surely I can feel sorry for a big city like Nineveh. There are many people and animals in that city. There are more than 120,000 people there who did not know they were doing wrong.
For reading a whole book to us this morning. Appreciate that. What a story Jonah is. Don't you think it's a great story? Yeah. It is, isn't it? It is. And there's three words in this book that really stood out for me, especially in this last chapter, chapter 4. And those words are mercy, humility, and obedience. So let's look at mercy very quickly together. Now, Jonah, like us sometimes, had a bit of a short memory, didn't he? There he was in the whale in chapter 2 of the book, in the fish, whatever you want to call it, fish or a whale. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, Lord. I'm sorry. I did wrong. I shouldn't have run away to Tarshish. I'm going to serve you. Forgive me. I've been a bad guy. I've not been a good prophet. I've not done what you've asked me to do. And so God has mercy upon Jonah, just like you had mercy upon Evie for forgetting the lunch. God had mercy on Jonah because that's the kind of God we worship. He's a merciful God. So he orders the fish to spew Jonah back onto dry land, and we're back on track. We're in chapter 4. Jonah has been in Nineveh, and he's doing what God has told him to do, proclaiming judgment on the city. But chapter 4 begins with Jonah saying, I'm not happy that God has saved the city. And he becomes angry with God. How dare God show mercy to these people? There I was, Lord, in my hometown, enjoying life, and you told me to go there, and I knew that if I went there, you would be merciful, so that's why I went there instead, to Tarshish, because I know that you're a merciful God. I knew this was going to happen. So here's a couple of questions for each of us this morning. Have we forgotten how merciful God has been to us in our lives? Have we forgotten that? Because it's very easy to forget God's mercy, isn't it? Secondly, have we been cross with God for showing mercy to other people when we would rather he did something else to them? Just a couple of questions to think about. On mercy. Secondly, humility. Jonah had a problem, you see, with God being God. Jonah wanted judgment, and he sulked when God showed mercy. You know, as Evie said, God overturned the city. God showed mercy to the sailors, didn't he, in chapter 1, and also to the king of Nineveh and all the people. Mercy is part of God's character. But Jonah had forgotten how to walk humbly before his God, like the king and like the sailors and like everyone in the city of Nineveh. Jonah had forgotten. You see, the Hebrew people, the Israelites, they were taught by God to be a light to the world, weren't they? They were supposed to show all the surrounding countries of the world what God is like, so that all the surrounding countries of the world would come to Israel and discover God for themselves. Jonah had forgotten his call to walk in humility and to walk intentionally shining his light out into society. He'd become arrogant. He wasn't humble. In fact, I think Jonah was a little bit of a drama queen. Have you noticed? Have you noticed he likes to say to God, oh, I've had enough. I feel so bad, I want to die. Says it quite a bit, doesn't he? And God's loving, gentle reply to Jonah is, do you think it is right, Jonah, for you to be angry? Do you think it's right? And he teaches Jonah a lesson using this plant and this worm. So Jonah, he has delivered the message rather reluctantly, not with humility, and he goes and sits down and goes to the east side of the city, sits and waits to see what will happen. And he's probably thinking, I hope they get God's judgment. And God creates this beautiful plant to grow over him and to keep him cool and to shade him. And Jonah's like, oh, this is quite nice. I've got a ringside seat to see what's going to happen. And then eventually he goes to sleep. And in the night, this little worm that God creates comes along and gnaws away at the plant and totally eats it for his breakfast. And Jonah wakes up thinking, where's the shelter gone? And God causes an east wind to blow, and it's hot, and the wind is burning on Jonah's head, and he's getting really angry, and he says to God, I want to die. I've had enough. He says it again. I want to die. This is too much, Lord. Oh. And God says to him, do you think it's right for you to be angry, Jonah? Second time God asked this question. Do you think it's right to be angry about the plant that's been eaten by the worm? And Jonah says, yes, I'm angry enough to die. It's so terrible, Lord. He remains in a sulk with God. And yet God says to him, do you think that it's okay for you to be so angry about this plant and this worm? You know, you've done nothing to cause this plant to grow. You've done nothing to create this little worm that came and ate the plant, and yet you're so angry. Can I not be God? Can I not be angry about the fact that there are 120,000 people in Nineveh, whom I love, who don't know their left hand from their right because they're spiritually confused? I love them, and you're angry with me because a plant has been eaten overnight? Humility. Here's a couple of questions for us to take away. Is God being God in your life at the moment, or are you angry? Are you in a sulk with God? Are you cross that things aren't going your way? What's it going to take for you to choose to humble yourself before God and surrender to his way of doing things rather than how you think they should be? Lastly, obedience. Now, I've said three times in this chapter that Jonah tells God that he wants to die, right? Why do you think that is? Why do you think he's being a drama queen and having a bit of a hissy fit with God? I think Jonah is a little bit vain. You see, he was this prophet who was told to deliver this great message. He walks around the city. We're told it takes about 3 days to walk through Nineveh. So he delivers this message, and God actually says, you know what, I'm going to have mercy, because that's the kind of God I am. And Jonah's like, but I've delivered the message of judgment. I'm going to look stupid. Jonah doesn't get that God simply wanted him to obey and not play judge. It's God's place to be judge, isn't it? It's our place to obey. If God wants to change his mind and tell us he's got a different plan a bit later on, we have to go with that rather than do things our way and get cross with God. So, final question. Are you obeying God today? Or are you in anger or resentment or frustration or judgmentalism or whatever? Are you trying to avoid what he's asking you to do because you think that you know best, better than God? Mercy, humility, obedience. That's what I see in this last chapter of Jonah. And just to end, you know, it is good to study books of the Old Testament like this. They always, always point us to the New Testament, don't they? If you look carefully enough. I mean, Jesus himself gave the sign to the Pharisees that he would be like Jonah in the belly of the whale for 3 days and three nights. Jesus died and rose again, as we know. But I was reminded of some other story in the New Testament when I read this, and I was reminded of the prodigal son. You know the prodigal son, and the son returns, the son has humility, and he decides to finally obey his father and go back and be the son he was supposed to be. But it's the elder son who's so angry, the elder son who's like Jonah, angry that his father has shown mercy and compassion upon the younger son for all that he's done. I pray that we never forget God's mercy shown through Jesus to each of us on the cross. I pray that we always walk humbly before God, even when we don't understand his way of operating, what he's telling us to do. But let's just let God be God in our lives, shall we? And I pray that we choose to obey what he asks us to do and not think that we know best, because then we are so much closer to God in friendship, aren't we? And also, we can be used to show the mercy, the love, and the grace of the gospel to the people out there. Amen.